This is PhotoBizX, episode number 296. And today's special guest is a writer, designer, podcaster, online course teacher, and software creator. He's also the author of a brand new book. It's called Company of One: Why Staying Small is the Next Big Thing for Business. I'm talking about Paul Jarvis, and that interview is coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. This is a New Year's Eve special. Special in the fact that it's still the Christmas holidays. I hope you are enjoying the break as much as I am. I don't know what your days have been filled with, but I am loving this period. And I love it every year because it kicks off with Christmas, and we had a fantastic Christmas. It started for me, for us, for my family on Christmas Eve. I did a 120-kilometer bike ride, and we all met for lunch at a local pub/restaurant on the water at a little place called Etalong. It was just perfect. The weather was fantastic. And then Christmas Day, Linda somehow organized to have a table tennis table delivered right at the death on Christmas Eve. So the boys woke up to that lovely surprise. And it's been the ping pong world championships ever since. So that's been great. And then the following days have pretty much started out with a bike ride for me most mornings, a walk or a visit to the gym for Linda. My rides have been anywhere from 80 kilometers to 120 kilometers. We get back, have a bite to eat, do a little bit of work, and then usually have an afternoon snooze before catching up with friends or grabbing a drink somewhere, heading down to the beach, going for a walk, or just chilling out. It just really has been fun. And the little bit of work that I have been doing has been a lot of fun as well. I've been playing around with Facebook ads, putting some ideas to the test, doing lots of reading and trialing different things. And the results have been pretty cool so far. So I'm going to be sharing all those in a future episode. And we're going to dive a little bit deeper into Facebook ads throughout certainly the first part of the year. And we'll see where it goes from there. But at this point, Facebook is still such a great platform to attract our perfect clients as portrait and wedding photographers and headshot pet photographers, newborn photographers, you name it. If you're shooting people or pets, Facebook is such an easy way to reach out perfect target clients. I was planning to talk about Christmas and holidays and having a good time, and here we are already. I'm into Facebook ads. It's funny where things lead so quickly when you start talking about photography, business, and the things that you love. And yes, that does include my family. So back on track. I hope you are enjoying the Christmas holidays as much as I am. I hope you're looking forward to a fantastic 2019. I thought this interview with Paul would be a great way to kick off the season, the year, because the very things he's talking about in his book, I'm guessing, will be directly affecting you and your business. So that's the conversation we're going to be having for today's interview. It does revolve around Paul's thought process and the ideas that went into his book. And as usual, with every interview, there is something extra for premium members. In the second part of the interview, we dive pretty deep, pretty quickly into email marketing, because that is one of Paul's strong points. He has a very large email list compared to most photographers that I know. And in that part of the conversation, he shares his thoughts and ideas on what we should be including when we email our list of photography clients and potential photography clients. So lots to cover in this interview. Lots of things I hope that get you thinking about your business, life in general, setting goals, knowing when enough is enough, and maybe even formulating a plan of what success is to you and possibly readjusting your targets. I won't give too much more away. Let's get into this interview with Paul right now.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is Paul Jarvis. He's the author of the new book, Company of One, which focuses on the idea that staying small and avoiding growth can be more enjoyable, more fulfilling, and possibly more profitable than going big. Paul is a writer, a designer, podcaster, online course teacher, and software creator. And interestingly, the contact page on his website has no contact information. He says the volume of email was too much. Instead, he says, pretend I'm dead, and that everything he knows is available online through books and articles he's written, podcasts he's hosted, and the courses he teaches. I'm rapt to have him with us now. Paul, welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. You don't have to pretend I'm dead, just...
Was it that bad? Was it that much email?
It's just like, I know I'm pretty good at setting boundaries. For some reason, it's a skill that I just have. I mean, I might have fostered it a bit. But yeah, I was getting a lot of emails, and it was more that I was being asked questions that I know I had answered. And I feel like a better use of my time is to work on answering questions once, and then whoever needs the answer can just go and find it, as opposed to having to answer the same question all day, every day. It's like a monotony there that I'm not super stoked on.
Well, I mean, you did something similar just recently. I mean, I subscribed to your newsletter, and you basically said that you're going away, you know, now that you're pretty much finished until 2019. Wait till then to hear back. And is that for the same reason, so you can be more productive?
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing is, like, so I've had my newsletter for 6 years. I've never missed a Sunday when I'm scheduled to send an email, but I also take breaks. So I also know that this time of the year between mid-November and the end of December, people are busy. People get enough emails. This whole Black Friday thing in the States has kind of become a global thing now. And so, like, I just think of like the volume of email that I got just over the last weekend alone was just ridiculous. Like, if I sent out a Sunday dispatch then, it would just be one of about 500 emails that people could get. And I don't need to add to the noise at this time of year. I have nothing I want to sell at the end of the year. I don't do any Black Friday sales. I don't even celebrate Christmas. So I just feel like people hopefully appreciate the break. Like, I don't need to show up in their inbox for a little bit of time, but then I will again in the new year, and I like sharing with them. So I just feel like it's okay to take breaks sometimes, and hopefully people miss me. Hopefully people actually see that, oh, he hasn't sent an email for a month and a half, and then they miss me, hopefully.
Nice. So do you take that time, is that then to focus on writing and doing what you want to do, or do you literally take a break at the same time?
It depends. Sometimes I actually do take a break, which I think is pretty necessary. But a lot of the times, yeah, it's like I like to focus. I don't think I'm smart enough to really multitask, or I don't even feel like it's a skill I want to foster or a skill that's possible most of the time. So when I do take breaks from regular communication with my list, it's to write it. Like when I was writing Company of One, I took, I think, 2.5 months off to write the book. And because I basically said no to every other obligation I had in my business, I could write a book in 2.5 months, which was pretty quick, I think, for a book of a decent size. And then this time of year, yeah, it's more this time of year that I just don't want to add to the noise. I think people receive enough. Enough is one of my favorite words. And that's kind of the point of the book. So I feel like people get enough. There's enough noise in the world at this time of year, so I don't need to add to it.
Sure. I'm going to get into the book in just one sec, but do you feel, or are you worried that there is some disconnect with the way that you live your life and the way you get to structure the way you do things compared to the people that follow you or even the listener right now? I mean, we're photographers. I'm a photographer. If there's a chance to get a booking or generate a lead or answer an inquiry, there's no way I'm switching off.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been there. Like, I've been in the exact same place. I did web design for clients. Like, it was obviously different work, but it was still like I was chasing leads, chasing clients, trying to get bookings and all that for 15 years. But I also realized that I don't have to say yes to everything. Like, not everything is going to be the opportunity that makes or breaks my business. And I mean, even when I was doing that, like at the time, I think I was taking 3 months off a year to travel. And I was just clear with my clients where I'm going to work on the project. We're going to get it finished before I go. If you want to work with me again, we can pick it up when I get back or with new clients. there'd be an autoresponder saying, hey, I'm not booking right now. They don't need to know I'm away, but just that I'm not booking right now, but let's talk on this date and we can get things going. And I mean, yes, I did worry that, well, if I take this break, I won't be able to pick things up where I left off, but that was never the case. And I feel like by taking time off, I was able to recharge and I was able to be more productive and produce better work when I was working, when I was actually taking breaks. And I mean, even at a micro level now, like I could technically work more hours and make more money, but I think that I'm not a machine, especially as I like in my 20s, I definitely tried to do that unsuccessfully, but like I'm in my 40s now and like my body wouldn't let me. Like if I didn't take time to stand up and move around, go to the gym, go for a walk, go do some yoga, get out in the garden, like do things, not just sitting at my screen, staring at it and typing on a keyboard, I would get sick more. I would be sore more. Like I need my body to treat me well because my brain needs to keep working so I can keep being at my best for the creative work that I do.
For sure. Look, I know when I was early on in my business, I would struggle to book in holidays and I would often change my holidays because I had a wedding inquiry or a booking for a wedding that, you know, it could be up to 12 months out. And I was planning to have a holiday then, but I would say no to the holiday because it's a wedding booking. Were you similar, like when you were starting?
When I was starting, yeah. And then I realized like in my mind, I needed to treat my holidays like they were client gigs. So it would go into my account. Like if I ever said to my wife, like, let's take a holiday, dear, she'd be like, okay. If I didn't put it in my calendar, it was never going to happen. Right. So that was the first thing. It had to actually go into my calendar and I had to treat it with the same respect that I treat client bookings, where if I say I'm going to work on a project, I'm going to do it. If I say I'm going to take a vacation, I'm going to do it and I can't change that. And I mean, it's definitely difficult and definitely like if I was struggling in any way, then yeah, I'd rather work and make money to pay rent than go on holidays. But if I had my bases covered, then I know that like somebody else is going to get married 12 months from the date that I said I couldn't do the project. So there'll be other things that come up. And I think when we're creative, we get in our heads about like, if I don't do this project, there won't be any more. And typically that isn't the case, at least not from what I found.
Mm-hmm. So what about the book? Why did you write it?
Yeah, it's funny. It's an idea that, so I've been unconsciously kind of working in the way that I describe in the book for about 20 years, because I've worked for myself since the 90s. And then probably about 6 years ago, I started to actually think about it. It's funny, I was out surfing. I live in Western Canada, where it's not as cold as the rest of Canada. So you can actually surf in the winter and not die.
Hang on, it's got to be freezing in winter in Canada.
So I feel like Canadian surfers have the most paddle power. Like if you can paddle into a wave wearing a 6 mil wetsuit, you can paddle anywhere. Like I know when I surf in Hawaii and don't have to wear a wetsuit, I can get into waves that other people can't, because my body is just so used to the resistance of paddling in a 6 mil wetsuit. So, and I mean, where I live here, it never gets below freezing. There's no snow here. Like I live in a rainforest, so it gets probably so nice. I don't have to talk in American numbers. I can talk in normal numbers. It's probably like 10 degrees, maybe between 10 and 15 in the winter. And the ocean is always about 6 degrees, even in the summer. So ooh, it's cold in the summer.
That's cold.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get used to paddling in a 6 mil and it's fine. Lots of gloves, and lots of booties. So I was surfing with, so the way that this relates to the book story is that I was out surfing with my buddy, who's a South African accountant guy, a freelancer. And it was, I think it was like September, and we were sitting out in the lineup and we were talking and he was like, well, buddy, I've made a back. Everything was well, buddy, or hey, buddy. That's just the way he talks, which is funny. But he was like, so buddy, I've made enough for the year. So I think I'm going to go rock climbing in the States for the rest of the year. Then he takes off on a wave. I'm sitting there. I'm like, what did he mean he's made enough? What does that even mean? And then I just sat there like an idiot, just like in the line. I'm not even trying to catch waves till he paddled back around. And we started to talk about it. And he's like, well, I know how much I need to make. And if I make more than that, I'm no more happier. If I wanted to try to make more than that, I would have to work more. I'd have more responsibility. I'd have more stress. So he's like, I don't bother. He's like, I make enough. And when I made enough, I can pick work up next year. And there's always work that I can do next year. So, and he's not an idiot. So he doesn't take off time around like year end for taxes. He takes time off at the end of the year when most companies don't have year ends. And I started to think about it and I was like, that's actually really smart, where there's this idea that you can have enough. And then I started to think about it and I was like, it's kind of how I've been running my business all along. Like, I feel like I wasn't really conscious of it, or I wasn't being smart about doing it in that way because of any conscious reason, but it was just that I was good enough at what I did. So I was always at tons of bookings. I always booked far in advance, which helped with booking vacations because I was booking in advance regardless of whether or not I had time off. And people were telling me always like, well, you do this well, you have enough clients. Like, why don't you grow? Like, why don't you build an agency, like a web design agency? Why don't you hire a bunch of people? And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, that doesn't seem fun to me. Like, I actually like doing the design work. I like dealing with the client. I like handling the project. So in essence, I would be promoting myself out of a job I like to hire people to do the job I wish I was doing, and I'd be jealous of them. And plus, I would be responsible for their salaries. I would feel responsibility to like make sure that I have a salary paid for them so their kids can be, like, there's a whole story in my head. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I like just having a small business. And where the book kind of came from was I always thought that it was like me and Klee, who are like the business weirdos, who were like, this is the way we kind of run our businesses. And yeah, we like to make money. We like to be profitable, but we also like to enjoy the lives that we lead. And then I started to write about it, just like articles and that for my newsletter. And I was like, this is just some weird thing that I do, but it's interesting enough to share. And then I shared it. And then it was inundated with people saying like, I actually don't want to grow my business either. Or I like the size my business is at. Or I like to optimize my business, not for more all the time, but so I can have enough and build my business around the life that I want to lead, the full life that I want to have. And I was like, this is interesting. There's like a lot of people who feel the same way that I do, who aren't necessarily getting like press coverage in tech papers or in journals or business things, who are basically doing really well for themselves. And they're basically too busy making money to talk about it, like the news or the media. And so I started writing the book, and that's basically what the book is how to think about questioning whether or not growth makes sense, because sometimes it does in your business if you're succeeding, and sometimes it doesn't. And it's up to us if we run our own businesses to make that decision, because if we're calling the shots, we need to be happy with the direction our business is going. I realize that's a super, super long answer to.
You're bringing up so many questions. I mean, well, first of all, is this a generational thing, do you think? Because if I went to my parents and said, hey, I'm going to work 6 months because I'm going to make enough in 6 months to have the next 6 months off, they'd probably be okay with it now because I'm 47. But if I said that when I was younger, they'd say, well, hang on, that's not normal. You make more, so you have more when you retire. So do you think this is a generational thing that you're talking about?
It could very well be, because even like my dad is just like the typical like post-World War II Brit, where he worked, like he literally got a gold watch when he retired because he'd been at that company for so long. And that's how work used to work, where you got a company job, you towed the company line, you were like a company man or company woman. And work doesn't work that way anymore. Like, I think about even my work, like I've worked for myself for 20 years and I feel like it's a pretty stable job at this point. And a lot of my friends who work at corporations or who work at startups have jumped jobs almost like every 6 months, every year, and they've been like laid off or downsized. And I feel like it's almost less risky in a lot of ways to work for yourself than it is to work at a company where like they're going to let you go. If they need to, you're going to get cut. Whereas if we can build a business for ourselves, if that makes sense for us, then we can build it in a way that makes it less likely for that to happen. So yeah, I think it could be a generational thing for sure. But I also think the nature of work has changed.
Yeah, I agree. So do you think is the first step to heading down this road, if we want to create more time to do what we want to do, is it to work out how much is enough?
Yeah, I think for sure that that's a big piece of it. So definitely the working out enough, because I think a lot of times we see one version of success or one version of a business, like the Elon Musks or the like Tim Cooks or the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world. And we think that like, if our business only could do well, we would be them or we would be the size of their businesses. And it's like, to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like one, I wouldn't want to have to testify in front of Congress like Zuck did. Elon Musk sleeps on a couch in his office and tells people that they have to work 80 hours a week or they're never going to succeed in business. And he's so paranoid that he will not take even a day vacation anymore because the last two times in 10 years that he took a vacation, his rockets exploded. Just happened to be on launch days and they exploded, which is sucks. But I don't think it was because he took a day off. Like, I really think that there was something else that wasn't that. Like, I think he should be a little bit more analytical than that. So yeah, I think that thinking about enough is definitely the counterbalance to seeing what somebody else has, if it's more than what we have and wanting that. It's almost like keeping up with the Joneses, but like in the business sense, where if we think about what enough is, maybe we don't want that. Like, I don't want the life that those men have. So if I think about things like, well, how much is enough for me? Like, obviously, I want to be profitable. I want to make enough money to cover my bases, my family, to live comfortably. I definitely want to save up for retirement. I don't even know what retirement looks like, to be honest.
Well, that's the big thing, though. That's one of the things. Enough now is easy to work out. Like, how much do I need this year? But the unknown is that when I get to 65.
Yeah. And I mean, you can kind of work backwards. And I mean, I do read a lot of like personal finance stuff where J.L. Collins, I think, says you need 25 times the amount of money you want to live off a year. And if you invest that in basically index funds, then you can get they'll pay out on average about that. So if I need, say, 90K a year, then I need, I think, if my math is right, about $2.4 million in the bank. If I want 30 or 40, then I need about $1 million, which seems like a big number for, and like, I still think that those are huge numbers, but I think like if you chip away at it, it's definitely possible over time. Like, obviously it's hard to save up like $1 million or $2.4 million in a year. But like, if you think that you're working for about 40 years and you can save up a bit every year, and as you exist longer in a market and work more in a market, you'll hopefully get paid more and you can save more. And I mean, I've always lived as far under my means as possible, possibly for neurotic reasons, because I don't want to stress about money. So if I need as little money as possible, then I'm profitable much sooner every single month. But also, if it goes past that, then all that money just goes into savings. Like, I don't feel like I need a frivolous life. So I definitely like some creature comforts for sure. Like, I don't live in a cave and eat cans of beans, but like past a certain amount, like I don't need more. And there's even a study done, again, in the States. So it's probably different for everywhere because it's very consumer centric culture there, and definitely in a lot of the West as well. But they found that people were happier the more money they made, which makes sense, but only up to a certain point. And I think the point based on their economy was about $75,000 US. And what they found was that once people made more than that, the more they made, the more unhappy they were, right? Which is interesting.
That's weird.
Where there's kind of like this nice, squishy middle ground. And I think that that's true for business as well. Like, I know that if I make a certain amount in my business, I cover my bases, I put money away for retirement, don't stress about money, I'm happy. In order to make more money, I would probably need to hire some people, which would be stressful and more responsibility. I might need to spend money on paid acquisition, like ads on Facebook or whatever. That would cost me money. And so if I scaled up past a certain point, if I made past a certain amount of money, it would be more work and more stress and more managing. And I don't feel like that's right for me. So back to the initial thing that we're talking about, enough. I think that that's really the catalyst for making changes that are right for you, or defining what like success actually, like if it's your business, you get to define what success in that business is. I think that's really powerful. And I don't think enough people think about that.
That's such a tough question, because I think we're surrounded, like, so if you take photography and photographers, for example, then, you know, I'm interviewing mainly photographers from week to week, and those photographers that I'm interviewing, if they're successful, if they're doing, you know, multi six figure incomes with their photography businesses, the photographer that's making less than that is striving to get to the level of those interview guests. That's normal, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we all kind of have this, like, we all fall into this comparison trap. I think it was Teddy Roosevelt who said comparison is the thief of joy. And I think the problem there is that we end up comparing our worst things to somebody else's best things. So if somebody says that they gross like $200,000-$300,000 in the photography business, that's great. They've grossed a lot of money. What was their profit for that? Maybe they had to spend more than a photographer who made $70,000 but spent like $10,000 on gear and that was it. But I think it's really difficult to, it's very human to fall into that. But I also think that we shouldn't really let that guide our decisions or our actions, because like maybe it's a stress on that person to make that much money and they work themselves to the bone and they're not even happy doing that. Like they probably put on a good front to be like interviewed or post Instagram stories, but maybe they're not super happy. I like even just thinking about the happiest people that I know, like they don't care how much they make past a certain point. Like they have full and fulfilling lives where work is just one part of it. And if it covers their bases, then they're good. Whereas I know some people who make gobs of money. It's definitely not me, but I know some people who do that. And they're like, it's work. Like it's so much work to maintain that. So outside of the pretty Instagram stories of like getting off private planes or whatever, a lot of that stuff is staged anyways.
Yeah. Do you have kids? Do you have children?
No, I don't.
Okay. So let's say on a hypothetical, you had kids. Would you tell them to live for the now, or would you tell them that they have to make enough to have enough money in retirement? Or don't worry about that. That will look after itself when you get there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm super pragmatic. So I would definitely say, I think a lot of times, a lot of creative people want to run their own business, but they don't want to worry about the business side of things. And I think that that's a mistake. I think that we should all work to achieve profitability. And if we're working for ourselves, profitability means we're making enough to pay ourselves a living wage. And however you want to define that is fine. Or a comfortable wage, I guess, might be a better way to say that. But that should always be the priority. Otherwise, you're just a hobby photographer, which is fine. Like I'm a hobby photographer. I wouldn't know how to make money doing photographs. But if you want to have it as a business, you do need to think about the finances. You do need to think about, if I'm going after, say, such and such a market, like how much do they have to spend on gigs? How many gigs can I do a month? How realistic is it for me to book X number of gigs a month? And is that going to cover everything I need it to cover in my business for expenses and to pay myself a salary where I'm comfortable and can save for retirement? So if I had kids, I would definitely say like focus on that for sure, but focus on that to a point. You need to be profitable. I also think that if your business is profitable, it can continue for as long as you want it to continue. Like profitable businesses don't go out of business. Businesses go because they don't have enough money or because they're spending more than they're making, or they're spending based on what they think they're potentially going to make if things go right. And I mean, that happens a lot in tech where people spend just gobs of money hoping that they're going to acquire enough users to become profitable. And that's scary. Like it's scary to run like that. So yeah, I would say you have to make money. Mm-hmm. Son, you got to make some money, but you don't have to make all the money.
Yes, true. So if I read your book, are you going to tell me how to be profitable, how to be happier, how to stay small? Or are you giving me, is it advice on what I should do and what I shouldn't do?
No, I don't know how to define that for other people. I know how to define that for myself, but I think it's very personal. I think what the book is instead, and I think this is probably why I don't even like most business books. I feel like a lot of business books are blueprints, and I feel like blueprints are bullshit when business is concerned, because most business is a guess, first of all. And second of all, I don't know, like you, the listener listening to this right now, I don't know what's right for you. I don't know what's right for your business. So instead of being like a blueprint for your success, it's more of a tool to determine what success looks like for you and how to make better decisions to get to that place, which is a much tougher sell than saying, here's how you get rich.
Absolutely.
That will get you rich. One, I don't know how to write a book like that. I don't know how to write an honest book like that. But two, I feel like it would be doing people a disservice. Like everybody runs a business for a different reason. Everybody wants something different out of their business. Otherwise, they'd work for somebody else. It's easier to work for somebody else. You don't have to worry about all of the business stuff. You just have to do your job. But I think if you do work for yourself, you have to figure out what you want. And it's not up to anybody to tell you what you want. It's up to you. And this introspection and like business reflection is hard. Like, it's difficult to take time and to really think about that and to be honest with yourself. I think it's as important as getting invoices sent out to clients. Like, that's how important I think it is to figure this stuff out. And the book is there to help you figure things out for yourself.
So if I read the book, I'm going to be asking myself the questions that you're posing. That's the idea.
100%. At the end of every chapter, there's a few questions that you should think about based on the material around running a business and business growth. Yep, that's 100% what it is.
It sounds to me, and I might be wrong here, but the secret to happiness is to have that small business where you answer to yourself, you do the things and the jobs that you want to do, say no to the ones you don't, have the time off that you want. But the way to get there is to reduce the amount of stuff that you want.
Yeah, for sure. Reduce the amount of stuff that you want and to define what growth makes sense and what doesn't. Like, I would never say everybody should run a one-person business. Like, I don't even do that. I think I have 5 or 6 people that I work with. But I think it's up to us to determine like what size makes sense for ourselves, for what we want out of the business, what makes sense for the market. It's just like a company like Airbnb couldn't survive if they had one property, if it was one person running a site and they had one property on the site. Like, it needs to grow to a certain size, but past a certain size, it probably doesn't make sense. Just like if you're a photographer, maybe the types of work that you do, you need a few assistants to hold the lights or run a few other cameras, but maybe you don't need 100 more people. Maybe you don't need to turn it into a massive business. I think that every business has an organic size that it should grow to. I think all businesses, especially in the beginning, they have to grow. All businesses start at zero. We all have to adopt a growth mindset in the beginning to get to wherever our enough is. But where I think we do our business a disservice is when we don't stop to consider, well, what is enough? How will I know when I've got there and what will change when I do? Otherwise, we just continue in that growth mindset, the one that we adopted right from the beginning that served us really well. So I think that's really the point of the book. And that's what people will learn if they read it, is that I need to start to think about what success looks like and how will I know when I've reached a point when growth no longer makes sense, because it will make sense in the beginning for sure.
Is that a dollar figure? Is that what we're looking for at the end of the day, a dollar figure?
So it could, like, it's business. So it definitely relates to money, but it can relate to everything. Like, it can relate to the number of customers you have. It can relate to a good example of a non-money example is my own mailing list. So my list is where I generate the bulk of my revenue for my business. And it needed to grow to get to a place where there was enough people on my list that some of them were buying from me. So that's how mailing list works. Lots of people can be on it. Only some of them will buy. So it needed to grow to a certain size to generate enough revenue to sustain my business. But also part of my mailing list is that I send an email and I get a couple hundred replies every time I send an email, the weekly email on Sunday. And I like that. I like that I can get people to want to share something with me because I've just shared something with them. So I read all those emails. I reply to all, even though on my contact page, there's no way to get in touch with me. If a subscriber gets in touch with me and hits reply, then you better believe that I'm going to read that email. If they have a question that I can answer, I'm going to answer it. And I like that. And my list is at a size where I can spend a couple hours on Sunday or Monday, whenever I get to work, and answer those emails. If my list grew by 100% or 1,000%, the volume would be too big for me to manage. And I would lose that direct connection with my audience. And one, I like that connection. Two, I learn a lot from those connections. And three, they really drive the direction of my business. Because if I'm talking to potential customers and customers on a weekly basis, I'm kind of getting good insight into what they want, what they need, what they're working on, what they're struggling with. And that helps me have the business that I have. And so if it grew beyond that, if my reach grew beyond the reach that it is, I wouldn't be able to have that connection anymore, that personal one-on-one connection. And I feel like my business wouldn't do as well, even though I would have a list that had an extra zero on it, which might sound good, but doesn't do anything for the longevity of my business.
Yeah, but the counter argument is that you would generate more income.
Possibly, but I don't know if I would, because I wouldn't be able to make products that were as well suited for the audience if I wasn't able to connect with them all the time, if you see what I'm saying.
Okay. You said something interesting before because you know, we're talking about company of one, and then you say, well, I've got five or six people that I work with. I'm like, what? I thought it was just you.
No, so the title, so I really like the title Company of One, but it isn't meant to be literal. Like, I think it's more the idea that we can question growth and that less can be better in some situations. So a lot of the focus in the book is talking to people who run companies of 50, 100, but they can adopt the mindset that I'm talking about of determining what enough is. And for myself, I suck at managing other people. Like, I know this is a skill that I do not possess. I mean, even delegation, I do not know how to delegate. Just ask, I do all the cooking in the house. If my wife asks, what can I do to help with dinner? I'll shrug and be like, I'd love help, but I don't know what to delegate to you. So for the people that I work with, I was pretty clear from the beginning that I only wanted to hire people that I didn't have to manage. So one, they're all freelancers, so they're free to work on other projects whenever they want. I don't own their time in any way. But then if they're working with me, I hire people and I pay a premium for the best people that do the jobs that I need. So I don't have to manage them. I don't have to micromanage them. I don't have to check in on them to make sure they're doing the work. If they have a question or if there's a problem, then communication needs to happen. Otherwise, I assume they're doing their job and I don't stress out about it. I don't think about it. And I assume that they're going to give me the work on the deadline that we set together. And past that, I don't have to worry about it. And to me, that's perfect because I don't have to manage them. But it's still like that to me, like I wouldn't be able to run my business with a couple people. I mean, I'm a writer and I'm not very good at technical writing. So I have a copy editor who makes sure I have the right apostrophes and the right like verbs in the right places. Otherwise, it would be hard to make a living as a writer. So that kind of thing. So it's not really meant to be a literal thing. It's more meant to be a figurative thing where we can all kind of be companies of one at any size if we consider growth as being a question and not a definite.
Mm-hmm. Do you envisage people reading the book and then downsizing as a result of asking themselves these questions? Is that a possibility?
It could be, or it could be that they, I mean, I hope nobody loses their job, to be honest, but I think it's more to see like, well, what can be made better? What could be optimized for the size that it's at now? Because I think a lot of times businesses, like they're always aiming for the next thing or like, oh, we'll be more profitable if we add more, we'll be able to do much more if we have more of the market share. And it's like, the point really is like, what can you do with what you have now? Like, especially with the employees you have now, please don't fire anybody. So it's more that point that solving for more is the easiest way to solve for anything. And I think it's more interesting and smarter sometimes to solve for more with optimization. And a good example of that would, because I'm kind of talking theoretically here, is like if you have so much support requests that you need to hire a support person, well, maybe you could create content around answering or pre-answering questions for customers through like a knowledge base or videos or some other kind of way. So you can solve for like being inundated with support requests by trying to alleviate the support requests in the first place, not just hire another support person kind of thing. So that's kind of more what the book gets at than like, let's fire everybody and just work for ourselves.
Hello. That makes sense. I envisage that if, let's say I walk away from this interview and I read the book and I'm sold on the idea. I love the idea of certainly allocating more time for holidays. You've got me there. And I decide that I know what enough is, but it's going to be a totally different thing, I imagine. And you probably come across this yourself when I have to sell this idea to my wife.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like there's so many things in my life where people have thought that I was making the wrong decision. And my philosophy has always been, well, time will tell. Like, so I dropped out of university and the dean of the program, I was in comp sci and artificial intelligence. And the dean of that program was like, you're going to regret quitting school, young man, and you're going to be back. And I was like, okay, like time will tell. When I quit the job that I had at an agency that was paying really well and like a prestigious job, everybody around me was like, well, you're making a mistake. Like when I went vegan and stopped eating meat and dairy, people were like, you're making a mistake. And my philosophy has always just been like, time will tell. Like, I still don't regret dropping out of university. I'm still actually really glad that I did. Don't regret quitting my job. I don't regret going vegan. I actually feel a lot healthier. So I feel like time will tell. But I've also, and to speak more to the point of happy wife, happy life, I would never make a decision where a possible outcome would be ruin. So I would never make a decision to change my business in a way where it could possibly like wreck a good thing. I mean, I'd never tell anybody to. And a lot of people think that working for yourself is risky, but I think that the opposite is true. If you make decisions that are small enough where the outcome would never be like ruin. And I mean, it kind of makes sense to just make small, like if you're like, I'm sold on this idea, like I'm picking up what you're putting down here, Paul, then just make small steps, iterative steps, do little things. Like maybe it's that you take 2 days vacation on the start and end of a weekend, a couple times, and then see how that goes. And then it's not even, like, you don't even have to sell your spouse on anything at that point. It's just like, hey, honey, do you want to go away for the weekend and Monday and Tuesday? And if that doesn't work out, and if you find that like your clients aren't understanding of that, or if you find that, oh, geez, it's really affecting my bottom line to the point where it's hurting, then it's like, it's a lot easier to deal with 2 days off than 2 months off or 2 weeks off. True. So yeah, start there. And I mean, pretty much for everything in business, I think everything is an iterative process of exploring and learning and seeing what works. Cause like, I don't know this, I don't have any answers to anything.
You can't tell me that now.
There's just a few things that I think might be worth considering. And that's the potion I'm selling from the back of my horse and carriage, is that maybe we should all consider a few things and not buy this tonic that cures everything.
Yeah. How long ago did you start adopting this, would you call it a lifestyle or this approach to living?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think like lifestyle businesses get a bum rap because of things like Instagram, where it's like, if you have a lifestyle business, you're like living on a beach, working 30 seconds a day and drinking a Mai Tai. And I think that every business is a lifestyle, or every type of work comes with a specific lifestyle. So if you work for a company, then your butt should be in the chair from 9 till 5, Monday to Friday. And that's a lot, like you can't do much during the day outside of work. If you work for like a high growth startup, then you're probably going to have to work, or you work for Elon Musk, you're going to have to work at least 80 hours a week and maybe sleep under your desk a couple nights because you can't go home or you're too tired. So I think that we can all kind of think about the lifestyle we want. And for myself, the question that you asked, it's more been like a refinement where I've just started to, like I was just talking about, like I've made tiny decisions that couldn't make or break me, but could lead to different things. And I've been like, okay, I like this. And like, for me, like I love working. Like I would never want to work 30 minutes a day. Like I love my job, but I also on the other side wouldn't want to work 80 hours a day. I know that if I work more than right now, it's probably about like 15, 20 hours of actual creative brain work and maybe 15-ish hours of admin and business stuff. If I work more than that, I don't actually get more done. I don't feel happier. I don't even make that much more money if I do that. So I know that for me, for my business, for the type of things that I sell, that's what works. And I also know that like, I like going to the gym. I like going to yoga. I like going for bike rides on Wednesday afternoon with my wife if it's sunny, because it's never sunny here because I live in a rainforest. So I just know that there's certain things that over time I've kind of tested and I've been like, okay, this kind of work. Like if I want to go for a paddle with my South African accountant friend on a Tuesday morning because nobody else is out in the lineup and we can get all the good waves, like, heck yeah, I don't want to do that. And I've set my work up so that nothing is ever due immediately, which I mean is a bit different than like photography. Like you kind of have to show up when the wedding is happening. So
yeah, we can't go surfing then.
Yeah, but I mean, outside of that, like maybe just part of your week is that, where the wedding is hopefully not a multi-day wedding. That seems like that would be very hard to deal with for everybody involved. But like maybe it is like 1 or 2 days a week where you're on location shooting. And that's what, like, you have to be there till the thing is done. But then the rest of the time, maybe you do your editing best in the early morning. Maybe you do it best at night and you want to be outside during the sunlight hours. And so I think where we can make these changes or experiments, it's a good idea. Obviously, where we can't, it's totally fine too.
I love it. Mate, you got me when you started talking about holidays. I'm sold on the idea. I love it. I'm looking forward to reading the book. When will it be available and where?
So the book comes out on the 15th of January, 2019 in North America. The rest of the world gets it 2 days later on January 17th. Because it is published by a publisher, it should be everywhere that there are books. So it's on Amazon in digital, audio, and paperback format. It should be in your local bookstore, to be honest. And if it's not, please ask for it because they'll be able to get it. Like, there's apparently worldwide distribution for it. So it should be available everywhere that you're listening to this from.
Cool. And is it better for you if the listener or I buy it from you?
There's no way to buy it from me. I'm not allowed to sell it. Oh. It has to, because I have a publisher, wherever it's bought, I get the same amount of money. Like, if somebody wants to read it, I'm happy if they buy it in whatever format works for them, from whatever place works for them, from, like, maybe if you want to support your indie bookstores, then buy it from them instead of Amazon. But other than that, yeah, wherever is good for me, to be honest. I'd just be happy.
Very cool.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
I'm glad we left the vegan talk to the end because I recently read the China study and I've been a total convert for the last, I think, 2 or 3 months now. It's been amazing.
It's funny. Like, even I, like, when I got into it, I was like, oh, I need my meat. And then I realized a couple of years later how much I hadn't been sick and how much better I felt. But that's just me. I know some people that have tried it and it hasn't worked out for them. I think it's worth exploring even eating less meat, but, like, honestly, it's your body. It's your food choices. So just make smart choices and be okay with it. But yeah, the China study is ridiculously packed full of information. It's a bit of a heady read too.
Yeah, it was awesome though. Like, it was a life changer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so many people watch like Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead or What the Health or those kind of movies that are like really just average people trying something out and seeing what happens, which I think is really, I'm glad that people are just talking about it. Like, whether people go vegan or not, it doesn't, I like being vegan regardless of whether or not you are, but it's interesting that that's kind of out there in the society's conversation now. I think it's a good conversation to have.
True. Where is the best place to hear more of your thoughts and learn about becoming a vegan, amongst other things?
Yeah, I probably only read about vegan stuff once every 2 years. My list is the Sunday Dispatches, which is what we've talking about a lot. That's on my website. If you Google Paul Jarvis, I come up first, second, third, fourth. My website's pjrbs.com, but I never expect people to remember that. The book's website is ofone.co, and that has the list of all the big places that sell the book. And then, like I said, if you want to buy it from an indie bookstore, that's awesome. Just go ask for it at your indie bookstore, or they might already have it.
Fantastic. Paul, I'll add links to anything and everything that you've mentioned in the show notes. Mate, you've been a real pleasure to chat to. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. I appreciate you having me on.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Paul Jarvis. Paul, if you're listening, again, thank you so much for coming on, for sharing your thoughts and ideas on photography, on business, on staying small, and what that really means in today's world and in relation to running a photography business. Mate, you're an absolute gentleman. And yeah, again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts and ideas. For you, the listener, I hope you did find the conversation thought-provoking. I hope Paul's ideas have given you something to think about in relation to your photography business. And if you are a premium member, I hope you also got some great takeaways from Paul's thoughts and ideas on email marketing, newsletters, and what you should and shouldn't include in those messages to your email list, to the people who follow you. I didn't mention earlier, but if you are listening to the free podcast episode and you do want to hear the full episode, the full interview with Paul today, you can grab a 30-day trial membership over at photobizx.com/try. I'm going to keep things short for this episode of the podcast. There are show notes to go with today's interview, and you can find them at photobizx.com/296. In the show notes, I've got links to anything and everything that Paul mentioned, which is pretty much his website, which is at pjrvs.com, and also a link to his brand new book at ofone.co. I've also got links to his social media profiles, and you can also see a photo of what Paul looks like there in the show notes. That is it for this New Year's Eve episode of the podcast. I hope this has been a nice way to kick off 2019. Next week, we are back into the swing of things. It's going to be business as usual. And I have some fantastic interviews lined up for you to kick off 2019. Enjoy any more days that you might have off. If you are a premium member, I'll be talking to you inside the members' Facebook group, which has been humming along as usual right through the Christmas break, which has just been great. That is it. Happy New Year. I'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.